It's time for Declare Your Independence with Ernest Hancock.
Believe me when I say we have a difficult time ahead of us. But if we are to be prepared for it, we must first shed our fear of it. I stand here without fear because I remember. I remember that I am here not because of the path that lies before me, but because of the path that lies behind me. I remember that for 100 years we have fought these machines. And after a century of war, I remember that which matters most. We are still here! Tonight, let us make them remember. We are not afraid!
Fear, no fear, no fear here on Declare Your Independence with me, Ernest Hancock, each and every day on LRN.FM network from Phoenix, Arizona, from the beautiful studios of Freedom's Phoenix Farm. That's right. We're getting more. The chicken's getting big. We have 20 now. We have 3 goats. We're going to be adding some more goodies, but we got to keep them out of the garden, except when the bugs start coming in. Then we put the chickens in there just long enough for them to eat the bugs and not eat the plants and go, man, I tell you, we're learning a lot. I tell you, one big field we have, we're planting cigar-wrapping tobacco. Oh, we're going to have some tobacco, Freedom's Phoenix cigars. And you know, somebody asked me at my birthday party, they go, can you do that? Don't you have to ask? I said, I don't know. I'm not going to ask. Just going to do it. We'll see what happens. Now, what we want to talk about today, Atlas Shrugged is coming to Phoenix. Now, you know, behind the scenes, we worked a lot, make sure that happened, long story. But on my birthday, well, today's actually my birthday. I'm 50 years old today. But
hey!
Charles Goyette's going to be in studio for 2 hours. But the first half hour, we're going to have Michael Kilsky, a good friend of mine. We're going to be talking about objectivism. And the reason is because Saturday I got a Federal Express package from the Atlas Shrug promoters. They sent me posters. I got all the different, you know, big theater posters of them, and we'll be putting those up in selected areas and giving them away to selected individuals that will be doing special things with them. They get a nice YouTube, a video of, you know, who is John Galt somewhere. They get a prize. We'll talk about that later this week. Now, what we're doing is we have Atlas Shrugged coming as the part one of 3 of the book written by Ayn Rand in the 50s. Now, the reason I have Michael Kilsky coming on, he's an objectivist. He's associated with the Arizona AZObjectivist.com, Arizona Objectivist here in Arizona. He was also the state chairman of the Libertarian Party here in Arizona until just recently. He went down to vice chair because he's like, hey, man, I got a law practice. So he's doing that. He's also an uber computer geek, kind of big brain box on this guy. And I got to ask you, Michael, that seems to be kind of a minimum requirement, is that the objectivist people that, you know, devote themselves to logic and reason, it's a higher level of intelligence. Is that, why is that? Why would you think that that would be a common trait?
I think in large part, the ideas that are presented in Atlas Shrugged and the philosophy of objectivism is, you know, they're not easy to wrap your brain around. And it takes a little bit of time processing it, and time and effort and attention. So that typically would be something that is a, for lack of a better phrase, that's a characteristic of those people that are typically more intelligent. Not exclusively so, but it's just one of the factors. If you're more intelligent, then you will more often than not take the time to understand things. If you're not that intelligent, perhaps you won't.
You know, it's kind of been the trend, you know, since I reached my top of the hill at 50. You know, I'm not over the hill. I'm top of the hill. It's a mesa that goes into infinity. And I tell you, the time that I've spent observing humanity and doing a lot of activism and such, there is a trait that I see people that are libertarian, that are objectivist, that are logic and reason really rules their thinking, but that doesn't necessarily make them better people or even people I want to associate with. A lot of times they're more arrogant and a butthead, like me. But you know, but the one thing that I really see is that they approach problems differently. Now, what I wanted to talk about, and you can help me with this, is what is it that had such a cultural impact from Atlas Shrugged in the 50s? What was it? What was the theme? What was so revolutionary that launched her onto, it's like ever since she published this book, there has been a campaign to demean everything she had to say in that, even though it still survived all the criticism and has perpetuated itself and oftentimes dominated conversations on every subject. And it's taken a long time to get this movie made, and we're going to be talking about what kind of a cultural impact it's going to have. I mean, is it as much as V for Vendetta? Is it going to be 10 times as much as Braveheart? Is it going to be 100 times more than Gladiator? You know, Lord of the Rings kind of thing? And why? Go ahead and talk to that.
You give me a heck of a lot to start with there.
Because I want you to keep talking.
Okay, so here's the thing. Atlas Shrugged, and again, I'm going to just speak from my personal perspective. For me, people were telling me for years before I read the book, for years, they're like, you got to read this book, you got to read this book. And I'm like, yeah, whatever. And eventually I got around to it. And it really was, for me, a transformative experience. And here's basically why. I found myself, before reading the book, a lot of times very puzzled about the world and how things worked and why people acted the way they did and just not understanding because it just didn't fit together. And then after reading the book, a lot of those questions were answered, not so much as to why people did certain things that they did that seemed inexplicable to me, but more categorizing or providing some classification so I could kind of get, to some extent, people's motivations and their character and why that influenced the way they acted in ways that I found inexplicable or just very, very confusing.
You know, that was one thing that I got out of it, too, is that it was she spent a lot of time out of it. I don't know, it's almost 1,000 pages, a lot of time developing the character of the kinds of people that do the things that we find distasteful. So instead of just saying they passed this law or did this thing, she spent a lot of time on the kind of person that they were. And it, in 1994, when I read it, I'm going, wow, man, I know that person and that person and that person. And she really nailed a lot of that.
Yeah, she put it in a context that those of us who are a little bit more logically oriented could all of a sudden kind of get and go, well, now I can understand why somebody is doing something that really seems to a rational person not to make any sense, because now there is some explanation for it. It's not a good explanation. It's not a rational explanation, but it is one that seems to resonate and it kind of makes sense.
Well, the one thing, when we come back, I really want to focus in on what your anticipation is about the impact this movie will have on our culture. Because a lot of people have been waiting for this thing to come out. And now that it's here, you're going to go, oh, here we go. You know, give us a sentence. What do you think is going to happen after this comes out? It's just no blip at all. At all, or all of a sudden there's going to be a renaissance of objectivists, you know, pounding down the Arizona objectivist door, let us in? Or what do you think is going to happen?
Well, in large part, I think what's going to happen is it's going to make the theme and the story more widely available. And that may increase the interest. And then people, you know, some number of those people will then go back and read the book.
It has application to today. It's like she's clairvoyant, saw into the future, knew what bad people do. They do bad things. More with Michael Kilsky when we come back here on Declare Your Independence in just a little bit.
It's time for Declare Your Independence with Ernest Hancock.
I know you're out there. I can feel you now. I know that you're afraid. You're afraid of us. You're afraid of change. I don't know the future. I didn't come here to tell you how this is going to end. I came here to tell you how it's going to begin. I'm going to hang up this phone, and then I'm going to show these people what you don't want them to see. I'm going to show them a world without you. A world without rules and controls, without borders or boundaries. A world where anything is possible. Where we go from there is a choice I leave to you.
Yeah, that's what this is all about. And this is the impact that I anticipate that this movie is going to have. It is going to bring about the concept, the idea of self-ownership, of you don't own me. I will not be a master of slaves nor a slave. This is going to have an enormous impact on the next generation, Generation Next. Now, I want to ask Michael. Michael, help me understand what is it that objectivist believe. If I was to go and say, okay, I'm interested. Let's go find out what this objectivist thing is about. And they would say, okay, objectivism is what?
Well, it starts with some basic premises that reality exists, that what we see and what we perceive is a representation of reality, that based on our observations of reality, our study of reality, we can derive rules and laws and discover them and then use them for our purposes. That it requires the primary tool of a human being is their reason, their ability to think, their ability to plan and basically to use their mind. And that's really the most important, the most precious tool that human beings have.
Well, even the bad guys do that. They logic and reason all kinds of, we rule you and we're a parasitic class, which really comes down to, it's like saying the farmer is a parasite to the cow. I mean, it's more likely that the government, they see themselves as not a parasite, but livestock managers. And we're just livestock. So you can use your logic and reason all you want to justify how you're going to feed off of your livestock. But I mean, what is the ultimate goal? I mean, that may be the method by which you get to the goal, but what is the goal?
Well, and that's a very good point. I think it's a valid point. The goal is to understand, again, based on a concept of reality, of what is real versus what may be supernatural, that objectivism primarily rejects, is to look at, as human beings, are we individuals? Are we owners of ourselves? As you already said in your introduction, objectivism holds based on essentially starting from the very beginning of the premise that reality exists, and we go forward from that. That as individual human beings, we each own ourselves. We are not owned by anybody else. We don't owe anything to anybody else, nor do we have a right. Do we have any legitimacy of claiming ownership of anybody else, or a right to claim anything that they produce? Again, it just comes down to if we are human beings, as objectivism understands, if we are individuals, we have our existence is our right, and we don't owe anything to anybody for our existence, nor can we demand anything from anybody else for their existence. And all relationships between human beings, between thinking beings, has to be on a voluntary basis, has to be based on trade. And this is where the logic of the people that are, the government people, that breaks down. Because at the end of the day, it's, their logic Their reason is you will do or you will die. That's what their logic is.
Okay. The impact of that philosophy being hopefully accurately portrayed in the movie version of Ayn Rand's book, Atlas Shrugged, the bad guys, they don't want this being promoted. They sure as heck didn't want it to be made. And it looks like they, you know, did a good job of the trailers I've seen. It's a quality production. And they're not getting the big, giant release AMC, Universal, Paramount Theater kind of thing. But it looks like it may be a sleeper. And certainly it has a market. And we were able to convince them to bring it here to Phoenix. And I'm wondering what kind of a cultural impact that's going to have, or do you even feel or know of the opposition in the media and the lamestream media, the media that's so last century, are already preparing an assault? Or are they just, you know, we're just not going to talk about it? I mean, what do you anticipate is going to happen?
Again, I think the typical response of the media and the elites that are beholden to a system where force is a valid, they believe is a valid way to engage other human beings. Well, their typical response would be to poo-poo it, to belittle it, to do what they can to make people think that these concepts are silly. The idea that human beings should only relate to one another on a voluntary basis, that we shouldn't force people to do these things that are these lofty goals that they always claim that they're doing it for the children and for freedom and for democracy and all these other things. Again, it goes right back to the heart of the concepts and the clash of concepts here. The concept ultimately within objectivism is that you own your life. You don't owe a duty to anybody else, nor can you demand from anybody else anything that they are not willing to trade with you. Versus the concepts that are, you know, typically held forth as the average concept is like, well, as long as the goals are lofty and the ideas are grand, then it's okay if we kill a few hundred or thousand or millions of people in order to achieve those goals because it's for the betterment of something.
You know, that was one inconsistency that I see with Randians, because they kind of break it into different, you know, class. You got objectivists and you got the Randians and so on. And she, coming from Russia and seeing the goose step of collectivism taking over everything and saw it here in America, that's one reason why she wrote the book. She still had this foreign policy that we need to go free people kind of thing. How do you reconcile that?
Well, I think that's a misunderstanding. I don't think she necessarily said that we have a foreign policy that we have to go free people. What I think what she said is kind of a more negative. I'm not sure exactly if I'm putting it right, but the idea that we don't owe any kind of deference to a despotic system. We don't have to hold back if some country. Some dictator has got an iron grip on some country. We don't owe any deference to them and say, well, that's their internal affairs. That is her argument. And from that, you can go and say,
as
okay.
Individuals can do whatever they want. Hey, Michael, we're going to hit the button. Thanks for sharing time with us, man. I appreciate it.
And now, live from the studios of Freedom's Phoenix, Ernest Hancock.
You stand in taint of high treason.
Against whom?
Against your king. Have you anything to say?
Never in my whole life did I swear allegiance to him.
It matters not. He is your king. Confess, and you may receive a quick death. Deny, and you must be purified by pain. Do you confess? Do you confess? Then on the morrow you shall receive your purification.
Yeah, now this is the attitude that's going to permeate young minds exposed to the idea that, hey man, I don't know that guy my allegiance. When did that happen? Do I own myself? Am I able to think? Is my mind mine? Is the body that contains and motivates my mind mine? Do I belong to me, or am I a subject to someone else? Oh, I got to kiss a ring? Really? Oh, how did you arrive at that? What logical process did you go through to get to that point? This is the impact. That's a scene from Braveheart. That's why I use movies a lot. It kind of, you know, encapsulates, a couple of scenes will encapsulate an entire concept of why they made, and there's many of these in the book Atlas Shrugged. Now, Charles Goyette's joining me in studio today. We're going to talk about a lot of things. But the one thing I definitely wanted to talk to him about is the cultural impact that Atlas Shrugged has had over the years, the impact it had on him personally, and what he anticipates the role it'll play in the theater of American politics here. Charles, what do you think is going to happen?
Hey, Ernie, happy birthday.
Thank you.
Yeah. You know, Goethe, the great Renaissance man of German literature and the artist and statesman and stuff, said that everybody needs to read Cervantes' Don Quixote three times in their life, as a young person, in their middle age, and as an old person before they die. And every time you read it, you know, you'll learn something new. You'll take away something completely different. And that's my experience with Atlas Shrugged. I read it first as a teenager. I've read it now in the middle of my life. And I suppose I'll read it. I'll struggle through it again sometime. In the twilight years. And I had a different reaction to it any time. I'm not a Randian or an objectivist, although I agree with everything Michael Kilsky said. You know, I mean, of course, you know, if the premise is you own yourself, you've got me there. I'm on board. But it's like that book that somebody wrote a long time ago, said that it usually begins with Ayn Rand. You know, the more people she's awakened, the more people she's made into individualists and libertarians and so on, the more people that she has peeled away from the subordination to the state, the better I like her. As for the movie and the impact, I'm not sure. You know, it's a little early for me to say what kind of a job they've done with this, you know, and I'll find out from you after you see it, you know, whether they have, you know, just...
You're not going to go open at night?
I have tickets to Stevie Nicks that night. and Rod Stewart.
She'll stand in front of the light and she wins.
She has that weird metallic voice. Yeah. So, but I mean, I'll see it eventually, but I'd like to hear from you or the people that go there, you know, what it's like. But, you know, one thing, too, is that this is done sort of the way that Peter Jackson did the Ring movies. You know, it's done in three parts, and it's going to be a long time. You probably know exactly, you know, when the whole story will finally be put together and the third part will come out. So, you know, it may take a while for people to kind of, you know, so they're set up in part one and then they kind of start to follow it in part two and stuff. But I'm not sure. I always have high hopes that people will see, you know, there'll be a movie that'll open people's eyes and, you know, that, you know, it'll move them a lot and change things and win hearts and minds. And then, you know, never really does. I mean, you're the only person I know besides, you know, my own kids who really gets, you know, who really gets the thing. Speaking of the Ring movies, who really knows, you know, about the Ring of Power. The ring that Obama found, by the way, so that he could invade Libya.
You know, I'll tell you what my experience has been. The exposure of the idea that you can put in visual and audio that makes a concept that, I'll tell you what it was like. It was an episode of Star Trek The Next Generation that Picard trapped himself on a planet with another race. Even though they may have spoke English, they spoke in metaphor. They were just talking about, you know, it's like, what light through yon window breaks?
Yeah.
You know, and what they were talking about is how do you communicate when you reference certain, it's like your book. We'll get into it.
He goes, Flinden and Wanton on the planet Chin. And that means something to him because it's a metaphor for something that happened historically.
And right? he sailed with sails unfurled, which means he died.
That was great. That was a great episode.
So it was kind of this Shakespearean thing. And it really dovetails into what we'll talk about your book being translated, you know, The Dollar Meltdown, into Chinese.
Yeah.
Because the footnotes, they have to, you talk about Goldilocks or Scarlett O'Hara saying, if I think about that, I'll go crazy. I'll think of Tootalidi. I'll think about that tomorrow, you know?
Yeah.
So you do that. I'll think about that tomorrow is the Fed. You know, kind of worrying about inflation later. And the Chinese editors, they have to explain, what the heck is he talking about? Who's Goldilocks? And what does Scarlett O'Hara have to do with it? So, you know, that's the kind of shortcut that you can have a lot of times with a movie, is because you have an entire encapsulation of, it's not who wears the ring, it's the ring itself. It's the power itself. Eliminate this consolidation of power and you don't have a lot of these problems. So that's why I get so excited about having something that you can point to and you can just say one thing like, hey, man, he took the red pill. And you know what that means.
Mm-hmm.
You know, Matrix is government, it's control, you know, that kind of thing. So that's why I'm so enthusiastic about the certain themes coming out in certain movies. This movie, I hope, and has the potential to have an entire concept that can be boiled down into 90 minutes. You copy the living snot and pirate that, you know, somebody might do that. I would never do that. That'd be bad. You know, the movie, and you start giving it to, you know, junior high kids or high school kids or whatever. Once you do that infection of a young mind, how do you unlearn the truth? And that's the impact that I hope this has.
Well, I sure hope you're right. I, you know, and I hope for the best. And I honestly, I haven't been able to tell from the trailers whether they've done a really credible job with the story, but I sure hope they have. And I guess from the little I know about the history of the thing, they must be devoted. They must be very, very devoted to the story. You've talked with the people, you tell me. I mean, are, you know, they people that kind of get what they're doing, or they go, you know, this book sold 50 million copies, build an audience. Let's make a movie about this.
Which is the attitude they should have had. You know, this is the impression that I got behind the scenes. When they showed the trailer at CPAC, okay, I'm going, okay, so they actually freaking made the movie finally. Because we've been putting stuff on Freedom's Phoenix for years.
They're going to start. Angelina Jolie was going to be in it.
And Brad Pitt. And they had this, you know, studio and this theater. And then they were going to lose the rights if they didn't start production. And then I'm going, yammer. You know, until they actually, you show me something, I'm not getting all excited. Well, when they did the trailer, they actually have it in the can. They're around going, ooh, you know, and it looks like it's, you know, at least they had, you know, the lens focused and the sound looked good. I'm going, all right. So it's high production value, you know, mansions and trains and, you know, nice artwork and special effects. I'm going, hey, man, they spent some money on this. Well, they didn't spend the money on the actors. You know, they weren't big names and so on, but they did a quality job. And some of the people involved in the production of it, you know, took roles in the movies. They wanted to get it made. So I'm going, you know, it looks like I didn't have a problem with it. It looks like it'll be fun. Heck, Star Wars, nobody knew who the heck, you know, Harrison Ford was. I mean, you know, so this is, you know, make stars of these people, I'm sure. So I'm going, all right, how come I haven't heard about this more? How come I got this is the impression I got. And when we talk to people, you know, hopefully we'll find out what really happened. That they anticipated studios would pick this up and do the big distribution themselves. They didn't, because there's people that don't want this movie to get exposed, and they had to count on the people in the internet, and I'm not sure they really knew how. That's where we came in. That's what we do. We'll talk about more when we come back here on Declare Your Independence with Charles Goyette.
Rhodes? It's the Ernest Hancock Show. Where we're going, there aren't any roads.
Welcome back to Declare Your Independence. Of me, Ernest Hancock, here in Phoenix, Arizona, from the beautiful studios of Freedom's Phoenix Farm, where we have in studio Mr. Charles Goyette. Yeah, he's a popular talk show host here in Phoenix, Arizona. Award-winning head guy against the war at a time and on a station that did not like that none too much. And I remember him writing an article that got published in American Conservative, which is Pat Buchanan's thing, that said, how to lose your job in talk radio, which eventually he did.
Didn't take long.
But, you know, he was so redeemed from everything he said was going to happen that happened anyway. But it doesn't matter. The neocons and them, they didn't want to win a war. They just wanted to fight it. You know, that once they got in, it's like, it doesn't matter what you have to say then. The money had already been spent. You know, same thing going on in Libya again. Then he saw what was happening. His forte was in economics. He wrote the book, The Dollar Meltdown. And it was, there's a lot in there about gold and silver and just, you know, the concept of money and how we have the central plan. A great deal of that was in Atlas Shrugged. And just seeing some of the trailers, that kind of rises up in the trailers that, you know, the movie part one is going to include a lot of the concepts that you detail in your book. So then you have, you know, you imagine this, you have your book translated into Chinese and Korean. Then what happens when Atlas Shrugged starts hitting the planet too? They kind of married a guy. This entire concept of self-ownership and us doing all our stuff in Arabia and Arabic and some of these young minds there, everything is starting to just surround the collectivist. And it has to break, if only from the math involved in inflation. So these are the kinds of things that I see happening because of not just this film, but all the things that feed into this philosophy. I mean, don't you see that?
Yeah, I mean, this is, you know, if there's something positive to be said for the pain and grief that we're going to go through, if there's something positive to be said for a monetary breakdown such as we're entering, the positive thing is that it's, you know, like a cold slap in the face for the American people and people elsewhere around the world, and they need to reassess, you know, what is the nature of reality? Back to Michael Kilsky and the Objectivist. What is real money? What is phony money? You know, who are these people and where do they get these authorities? Where does this stuff come from? And who died and put them in charge? And so
they got in charge.
So but the process of a breakdown or a collapse discredits them all. And the only question to me is, are the American people have to live through this nonsense going to be clueful, aware, awakened enough by the things that you're talking about, you know, by being able to see this movie and, you know, get oriented, introduced to a book like this, for example? Are they going to be sold another bill of goods on the other side? You know, so you go through a monetary breakdown and some geniuses come up and they say, oh, well, we have a new monetary system for you and it'll fix all of the faults and shortcomings of the old one. And we've got the best minds on the planet, PhDs from Princeton, where Bernanke came from. They're all working on it and they've come up with this. And will the people buy it? Now, my belief is that the pain that we're going to go through would be so severe that nobody will buy the centralizers and the new, you know, the new scam, whether it's an IMF scam or an Amero or, you know, some other fiat paper currency. I don't think people will buy it on the other side of this one. But, you know, people, we've seen the American
people. That's not going to stop them from trying to introduce it.
Yeah, and the American people are quite capable of being sold a bill of goods. I mean, they've been sold one after the other during our lifetimes.
You know, this is it. I want to make this comment and get you to comment on it because, you know, we have a little bit difference in age. Okay. We're like another generation. You know what, you were in service and armed forces radio during Vietnam.
Right. Right.
So, you know, I was kind of after that. The, when I was assigned, you know, Atlas Shrugged to read, and it usually begins with Ayn Rand. I read that. I found that very informative. It's a short book. You know, it's kind of, you know, just talking about
the history. Prescott wrote that, Jerome Tussile.
Oh, really?
Yeah. I didn't know that. You should get him on the show.
I very well will. Sierra, as you heard it. Yeah, we'll get it. Now, Atlas Shrugged, when I read it in 1994, I could see what was going. I could understand why it was important. But what it did is, she's from the Soviet Union. She saw the seeds of collectivism and the impact it had on societies and individuals and the goose step and march towards the seeds that were here then. You know, you had the Red Scare and all that going on, which it was legitimate. I mean, you had a lot of people that wanted to use the collectivized government of the United States of America, and the federal government was a perfect mechanism by which you just put a bunch of collectivists in there and we rule you. I mean, that was what happened. And she saw it coming. If you didn't have the federal government or you didn't have all these bureaucracies, you didn't have this war machine, a lot of this wasn't even possible to take over. So what she did is she warn people. Said, look, you know, here it comes, and this is how. These are the kind of people, and this is their mindset, and this is how they view themselves. This is the vanity and the lack of self-confidence and self-esteem, and this is the mental illness that they have that they're going to perpetuate all this crap on everybody. So I'm going, all right, I get it. What happened is when you read the book, the first third was probably accurate and timely for the time in the 50s. By the time I read it in 94, heck, man, it was. I think it was only about 100 pages left of what needed to happen. And I remember during the high school years in the late 70s, a lot of the things that she said that governments would do like this happened in the Carter administration. And I'm going, well, I remember them doing that. I remember them doing that. I remember Reagan doing this. I remember, how the heck did she know decades before that they would do this? Because she just, you know, logic and reason. You know, they have to do this, shut down that, make sure you can't that, limit this, insist on that, central plan that, you know, and it has these results. If you were to read that book now, we are in the final pages. When they get to do part three, there is going to be current news that will be making the point at the end of that book. So it's like, and it was the same problem that we had when we were at your home doing interviews for Liberty, the Ron Paul Revolution, yeah. How the Withered Tree of Liberty got watered. I remember when we were sitting there and you got the call from the publisher, from your agent, saying the publisher had bought your book.
Yeah.
When they did that, we were sitting around and they gave a timeline for it and we're going, wow, are you going to be done in time? You know, the end's coming, man.
Yeah.
You know, so this movie almost didn't make it, which means it might be the perfect time.
Perfect timing, sure.
So this is what I see the impact. This movie, if it gets done, it isn't going to be kind of a, you know, a philosophical rant going on like Lord of the Rings. It is going to be current news. You will recognize the people in this as characters that could have been easily transplanted from now to the book in the beginning.
Well, the only thing I can say is my favorite part of Atlas Shrugged is the characters. They have characters you could just, all you have to do is hear their names and you know what they're like. These looters, these people that are, you know, like, you got people that, you know, actually produce the Atlas Shrugged means, you know, Atlas is the in mythology, Greek mythology, holds the world up on his back. And, you know, at some point, the people who are producing, that are working and so on, are so put upon, they get so tired of being bled that sometimes they shrug and they put down their load. What happens to the world when Atlas will no longer carry it all on his back? So anyway, these characters that, you know, that we generically call in Rand speak looters, these characters have great names. Like, there's Wesley Mooch and Tinky Morrison and Chicky somebody and stuff. You read them and you know, and then she draws out the characters and your skin just crawls and you go, I know who these people are, and they're the governing classes of America, and they populate both administrations, Republicans and Americans, and you see these guys, the governing classes. I mean, so help me, Timothy Geithner, the Secretary of the Treasury, is a character. He's a character out of Atlas Shrugged. He's one of the looters. He's just unbelievable. And then you start putting the pieces together. Do you know, you probably know, Ernie, do you know that that Barack Obama's mother in Indonesia worked for the Ford Foundation and answered to Timothy Geithner's father?
Whoa, 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 whoa. Whoa. You see, don't go away in the second hour because you want to hear this. I want to hear the connect. You can't, don't start that kind of crap when we're starting the music, man. You know, I'm going, wow. You know, and during the break, I'm going to have, make sure, I don't think Charles has seen all the trailers. And there's some in here that it tells you where this is going. I can see what's going to happen and why I was so enthusiastic about having this message available that you can share with others, because it's going to get a lot of buzz. They're trying to stop it, but we're not going to let them. Stay right there. We'll be right back after the top of the hour break and get Timothy Geithner's dad teaching Barack Obama's mom what? What? We'll talk about it then with Charles Goyette in just a little bit. Uncovering the secrets and exposing the lies. That's what readersoffreedomsphoenix.com get every day. Readersoffreedomsphoenix.com are constantly provided the information that detail the real news between the lines of propaganda about government policies and the true relationship we all have with coercive governments. Learn the true condition of our economy, innovations and technological breakthroughs in energy, health, computer science, and space travel. Learn the truth well before it's admitted to in the lamestream media, the media that is so last century. Corporate media has evolved into nothing more than distributors of government propaganda, but we now have a fantastic alternative. FreedomsPhoenix.com provides constant news updates on the issues that affect our lives in the most important ways. Our liberty and our property are under constant attack, and FreedomsPhoenix.com provides the understanding behind the propaganda while encouraging the participation of our readers. Join us at FreedomsPhoenix.com. That's Freedoms with an S, Phoenix.com. FreedomsPhoenix.com, where the revolution between the ears has already matured.